Well, now let's cross to Edinburgh in Scotland, which is home of the world's largest arts festival, the Edinburgh Fringe, which is just entering its final week. And in the middle of the action is our roving theatre correspondent, Richard Jordan. Richard is an international theatre producer and a blogger, and he's always where the action is when it comes to theatre right around the world. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Michael. Good to be speaking to you.
So the Fringe, I've been looking at this. There are 2,750 shows this year. That just sounds like too many to me.
It's quite a lot, isn't it? Every year it seems to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And of course, the big question is, can Edinburgh actually cope with that many shows? I mean, there's a fascinating statistic this year that if you divided the number of audience by the number of shows playing, it would work out at about three people a performance, which of course means that if you've got, you know, three shows that are pretty full, there's going to be several shows playing to absolutely no one at exactly the same time.
There's someone telling jokes in a garage on the outskirts of Edinburgh with nobody laughing.
Kind of quite a sad sort of little thought, isn't it, really?
It is, really.
the sound of two hands clapping or something like that.
Yeah, and those two hands are your own, sadly. I mean, just to explain to people who are not up with how the Edinburgh Fringe works, as I understand it, they take all comers, and every venue that could possibly be turned over to performance in the city of Edinburgh is appropriated for that purpose.
It absolutely is. I mean, one of Edinburgh's great successes is that it's an open access festival, which means that anyone can turn up. So if you're 70 years old and all your life you've always wanted to play Hamlet, guess what? You can actually hire a venue and come in and do that. And literally every corner of the city is taken over as a performance space. If they can possibly create something or find something, then that's what they will do. So be it a garage, be it a corner of a library hall or somewhere that they can turn in. But it's not just actually in buildings. Edinburgh's got shows happening all over the place. So, I mean, this year there's shows in vans, on buses that are taking place, on the new Edinburgh trams, which have just after 7 years of quite a lot of controversy and being built, they're finally up and running, and there's even shows taking place on those this year. So, you know, anywhere that a performance can happen, then someone in Edinburgh's probably wily enough to actually convert that into a performance space.
Now, every year there are Australian performers who go off to Edinburgh, partly, I think, because you can come back to Australia on the other side of the world and say, I was enormous at the Fringe, put that on your banner, and nobody knows whether you were one of those people in a garage with no audience at all or not.
But of course, maybe the thing that really made me laugh was there was one show, I think, this year that could only play a 5-person capacity per performance, which of course meant that they could actually sell 5 tickets, so they had a complete Edinburgh sellout. So they could now return back to the country where they've been to say, yes, I was a complete sellout at the Edinburgh Festival.
We were turning people away from our phone box.
Last year there were 79 Australian companies in Edinburgh. This year that number's increased to 91, so it's, again, a continued growth, and it's a mixture of theatre performance, but predominantly a strong representation from cabaret and circus here this year.
Now, there have been plans for a change, as I understand it. We should explain there are two events happening at the same time. There's the Fringe, which is this enormous thing, and then there's the International Festival, which is like any other arts festival in which there are high-calibre performances performing in major venues. At the moment, they're not quite occurring at the same time. They kind of overlap, don't they?
They do. Now, a few years ago, a decision was made to actually start the Edinburgh International Festival, which listeners will know is probably a little like the Perth International Festival or the Adelaide Festival. It was to start a week after the Fringe had begun. Previously, they had run side by side, but for about the last 10 or 15 years, that's not been the case. This year, as of next year, they've decided that the two festivals will align together again. Now, that represents some great things for an audience, because it means you can come to Edinburgh, you can catch a few more of those international festival shows if you're coming to spend a few days in Edinburgh. But it also means, of course, that there is actually a significant factor on the fringe of things, for example, like press coverage. When the international festival opens as well, those column inches for the fringe that are being covered with all the critics shrink, because, of course, they've now got to start covering all the major international festival work as well. So, I mean, there's pros and cons. I mean, the accommodation in Edinburgh is at a premium anyway.
Accommodation people who just haven't gone from Australia because they couldn't find anywhere to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know that even people are sort of camped out in campsites this year out in Edinburgh, and they're absolutely booming. And based on some of the weather that I saw last week up in Edinburgh, it's it's not going to be much fun if you're spending your fringe on a tent this year.
What have you seen? What's tickled your fancy at the fringe?
Well, there are several things. I think that new writing this year is strong and in evidence, and I feel very reassured by a lot of the new work I've seen. I particularly enjoyed a play called Freak, which was written by Anna Jordan, no relation to me, but a very promising young writer who had come up through Theatre 503, one of London's leading new writing venues. They've also been represented this year with a rather zany cabaret show called Margaret Thatcher, Queen of Soho, which I'd gone in with expecting to think was, didn't have terribly high hopes for it, but it's turned out to be one of the hits of the festival, and suddenly Maggie's back from the grave and singing a number of cabaret classics. But it's an enjoyable evening. Chef, which has won a Fringe First, a fantastic new piece of performance poetry from Sabrina Mafusa, a young urban poet who's been rising and making quite a lot of attention in the UK. That piece, very, very interesting show, set inside a women's prison kitchen, and a really powerful piece of performance poetry, which deservedly got strong acknowledgement from the Edinburgh Fringe and in their Fringe Awards. Work I've seen on the international festival I enjoyed very much, of course, the James plays, James the First, Second and Third, Rona Monroe's new epic adaptation, which then comes to the National Theatre later in this autumn. Absolutely magnificent, and I had the pleasure of being able to spend a Sunday where you can see all three plays performed over that day, so you really feel like you've had the history of Scotland presented in front of you. Musical theatre is very strong again this year. There's the Musical Theatre Awards that are happening again in Edinburgh, now become a real sort of bastion of the Fringe, and a lot of new musical work coming up. There's a very good musical of Janis Joplin songs called Full Tilt. Lorraine and Alan, a new musical there, which again I think held a lot of promise. So it's been a very, productive year. I mean, the new writing especially, there's some very interesting young voices coming through, which I think it'll be interesting to see where those go. I think what I've seen a lot this year is a lot of ideas, however. And, of course, the curse of Edinburgh with so many shows is that often things can open very, very quickly without a lot of previews before they get reviewed. And I think the one thing that one hopes people will do is stick with an idea, even if the initial reviews haven't been so good as you've been working on the show. You hope that they don't just abandon that. And in this age of sort of throwaway society, it can be very easy to sometimes give up on an idea very, very soon before you've actually necessarily matured it. And across 30 performances in Edinburgh, you can really learn a lot and shape a lot with a show.
Are you reading this as a shift in focus in contemporary theatre? Because there has been a lot of theatre over the last 10, 15 years that's been about performance. A lot of theatre makers who've used the expression text-based theatre as though text-based theatre was something dull and old-fashioned. Suddenly, is writing back?
I think there is an element of that coming back. I think what's interesting is there's a lot of solo work in Edinburgh. Now, whether that's just a decision on writers because they know that if they're writing something for a smaller cast, they can be more assured of getting it on, whether it's just simply the economics of Edinburgh, then certainly I think there's a shift in that. That concerns me slightly because, of course, one also wants to be able to see some larger work coming through. The other thing, of course, which is another problem with Edinburgh, is that because of the way that these slots, if people have not been to Edinburgh, the performances happen all day long, so they literally start from 10 a.m. in the morning through until midnight almost, or even later. And so the slots are often divided into one-hour time slots for a performance. Now, that's great in an Edinburgh context or a festival context, but often beyond that, sometimes for your evening out, if it takes you as long to get to the venue and, as it does to see the show, it's not always as full of evening. So I think there needs to be a shift sometimes in Edinburgh thinking that things can play for longer than that one-hour time slot. And I think that's particularly prevalent for new writing. I mean, Edinburgh's, of course, got a huge amount of performance art and all those things. I mean, really, there is an attitude of almost anything goes in Edinburgh, and certainly it often does. So, I mean, you can really see an eclectic mix of stuff.
Does the Edinburgh Fringe actually feed other festivals?
It does. I mean, Edinburgh is really the sort of big daddy of all the festivals in the world. I mean, there's a fair saying that the world of theatre or the world of the arts comes to Edinburgh every August. And indeed, it's kind of in many respects a major theatrical trade show. A lot of the work that you'll see here in Edinburgh will often be seen again subsequently next year at the Adelaide Fringe. It may well be seen, at some of the other larger festivals. The Fringe actually also encompasses some of the major international companies around the world that elect to come there. I mean, in past years, the National Theatre has played there. The National Theatre of Scotland is a regular performer on the Fringe. I mean, of course, Blackwatch, most famously, their show that toured over the world began as a Fringe show. So the scale and spectrum of work on the fringe can be really from the first time, you know, novice at the fringe right the way through to those very established companies. And there's something rather wonderful about that. You can open up the Scotsman newspaper, which is the main, you know, national newspaper for the fringe, national newspaper of Scotland. And on the page there, you can see the Royal Shakespeare Company being reviewed, say, on the left. And on the right-hand side, you can see a first-time company appearing side by side. And, you know, that's a very important thing, the fact that those companies can get that kind of national coverage. And, of course, a lot of the national critics from around the UK and indeed around the world will come up to Edinburgh for a few days and see work. That kind of coverage you may not be able to achieve at another time in the year. So that's incredibly important. And, indeed, there's a lot of people up looking for shows that they might indeed want to program. I mean, David Sefton, the artistic director of the Adelaide Festival, I saw him in Edinburgh only last week. I know that, you know, certainly Sydney and Perth are sending delegations over, so there certainly may well be, you know, work coming over to Australia in the next 12 to 14 months playing in their festivals accordingly.
Richard, the Scots are about to vote on the question of their own independence. Is that an issue that was flowing through into the theatre that you saw?
It is. It's a very significant issue. I mean, it's interesting. Every year there's certain aspects that sometimes come to a particular head or a particular theme that you can see evident in a festival context in Edinburgh. And, of course, this year, independence is indeed one of those big, big issues. It's a one-year issue that will be seen this year with the work that's being presented, but there is a significant amount of work. The playwright David Gregg is creating a daily sort of independence cabaret show that's happening in Edinburgh at lunchtime, which is featuring different people coming and doing sort of monologues and cabaret songs and pieces about the theme of independence and what it represents. The Travis Theatre is doing a piece called Spoiling, a new play there all about the subject of independence, and certainly it's forming many a stand-up comedian sort of you know, topic and set list on their performances. And of course it's a big question. I mean, Scotland goes to vote in the next month. As of today, the yes vote had gained a little bit of ground. I think no was still leading slightly in the polls, but there was about 14% of that still undecided. And it's very, very, very close as to which way it might go at the moment. So certainly within the artists' communities of Scotland, there is a great swing, it would seem, to those people wanting to vote in favour of a yes for independence. But of course, we will all know in the next month's time as to where that way, you know, what way that will head, and whether we will need to take a passport with us next year if we come to the Edinburgh Festival.
Well, Richard, I won't keep you any longer because there's another 2,700 fringe shows you haven't yet seen.
Yeah, I think as we speak, probably even in this short time, probably about another 90 shows have probably all started in Edinburgh at this very hour. Probably plain to no one.
Yes, Sisyphus, really. That's what we should call you. Richard Jordan, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Richard Jordan with the latest from the Edinburgh Fringe across Australia. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN.